Well, afternoon, everybody. It's a pleasure to be here. Silence. Goodness, come on now. I live in Brooklyn. I'm used to a little more noise and a little more activity level here, so. Okay, so I have the pleasure of presenting to you this morning the results of a survey that took place in 2009. And it had to do with the older population within New York City public housing. And I guess I'm supposed to indicate that, there are no relationships to disclose. And essentially, I'm going to give you some background information about the New York City Housing Authority, something about the methods involved in the findings of the survey, as well as some implications and next steps. So these are the five areas I'm going to be covering this afternoon. And by way of background, I should also mention that the New York City Housing Authority, most housing authorities essentially are very large real estate management companies. And so when you undertake a study like this, chances are, even if you're as big as the New York City Housing Authority, you don't have the capability to do this the right way. So we partnered with the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene, as well as the New York City Department for the Aging, DIFTA, and DOHMH, and the CUNY School of Public Health, which originated about 3 or 4 years ago, and they were also a very active partner in this undertaking. And in fact, the actual survey itself, which was a telephonic survey, was performed by the Baruch Survey Research Unit, which is an arm of the CUNY system. Okay, I guess before I get into the particulars of this, just a word or two about the scale of the New York City Public Housing Authority. Officially, there are about 420,000 residents who live in public housing in New York City. The actual number is actually much higher than that. The actual number is probably closer to 500,000, but the 420,000 represents those who are on the books. But depending upon, economic times and so forth, the kids move in, the relatives move in, and so forth. So it's kind of anecdotal, but we're fairly certain that, we're at least probably $75,000 to $100,000 people below the actual number itself. And if we look at the senior population, we chose 65 years of age as the cutoff, and there are 60,000 residents that are 65 years of age or older. And if we dig a little deeper into that group, there are 8,000 NYCHA residents. NYCHA is the New York City Housing Authority. There are 8,000 residents who are 85 years of age or older. So we're talking about a very large, stable, aging-in-place population. And what this shows is that the proportion of NYCHA residents that are 65 years of age or older, if we look at this area right here, is greater than that found in New York City as a whole. About 15% of our residents are 65 or older. Within the New York City population, that number is close to 12,000. And the other significant part of this is that we're expecting over the next decade or two for that number to eventually reach 1 out of 5. So again, a very large, stable, aging-in-place population. Unlike some other cities, when I say stable, I don't know whether that comes as a surprise or not, but New York, when public housing was developed in New York, it was not developed just for people who were very, very poor or on welfare or whatever. It was kind of a social experiment, and there were people who were, middle class, lower middle class, and so forth. And by forming it that way, by launching it that way, it's added quite a bit of stability to the population. But if you also look at what the rental costs are in New York, if you're paying $400 or $500 a month rent and living in public housing, it's very hard to contemplate moving into a 1 or 2 bedroom apartment in New York City, where at least in Manhattan, I think the average rent is about $2,500 a month now. So that also adds to the stability, I should add. Okay, the demographics of the population that we're talking about are also a bit different from the city. if we look at race and ethnicity, approximately 84% of our population is either black or Hispanic. And it's almost evenly distributed between blacks and Hispanics, as opposed to the New York City population, approximately 40% is either black or Hispanic. We're also very heavily female, 7 out of 10 residents, and again, of the 65 and older population, 7 out of 10 residents are female. And in keeping with our mission, approximately half of that population lives at or below the poverty level. Okay, methods. Again, we took a random sample of NYCHA residents, and I should mention that in public housing, the HUD requires all public housing authorities to report information and data almost exhaustively on an annual basis, and the tenant data system is what constitutes our database of residents. Each year, every tenant or every family in public housing has to provide information to update that tenant database. So there's primarily demographic information, there is information regarding how much money the family is bringing in, there's information about size, age, and so forth. So we have a fairly current idea of what the profile is of residents of public housing in New York City or elsewhere. When we took the survey itself, we were a little apprehensive initially. We didn't know how people would respond to being asked about their health. And as it turns out, it turned out to be a tremendously positive public relations. It was a coup. I mean, we didn't realize that the reaction was going to be quite this way, but people really felt very good about being asked about their health. And so the cooperation rate, more than 9 out of 10 folks who were actually contacted by the telephone surveyors agreed to participate in the survey, which is very high. And the Baruch unit is set up so that it's multilingual, so a lot of our population speaks other languages as a primary language, so we were able to accommodate that as well. And the survey data was weighted to reflect the indicators that you see here, gender, income, borough, age, and race and ethnicity. Borough, I don't know whether everybody's familiar with New York, but there are 5 boroughs, and each one is a county unto itself. Staten Island has the smallest proportion of NYCHA residents. The Bronx, Brooklyn, and Manhattan have the highest. So we had to make sure that the proportionality was reflected there as well. Okay, another thing we wanted to make sure was how reliable was the information that we got. So I mentioned earlier that NYCHA residents on an annual basis are asked to report on any number of indicators affecting their family. And some of those indicators have to do with health status. So the respondents to our survey are represented in the blue columns, and the respondents to the NYCHA annual survey, and then again the 60,000 who responded are represented in the red. So as you can see, there's a very close correlation, which brought us great joy, between the responses we received and the general profile of NYCHA residents. Okay, findings. Generally speaking, as you will see, it's not a particularly healthy population. 1 out of 3 of our older residents, again, these are residents who are 65 years of age or older, reported at least 1 ADL limitation, and more than 1 out of 10 reported 3 to 6 limitations as well. And we found also that if we looked at the group of NYCHA residents who lived below the poverty level, there was a greater incidence of ADL limitations with that group. So there was a correlation between income level and those that were experiencing multiple ADLs, activities of daily living limitations. Okay. We also looked at the prevalence and incidence of chronic conditions within our population. And 8 out of 10 NYCHA residents have at least 2 or more chronic conditions that they are living with. Okay? And as you can see, when we break down the 2 or more, we can see that a fairly large number of our residents are living with multiple chronic conditions. And the chronic conditions that we identified are those that are seen below: high blood pressure, high cholesterol, diabetes, osteoporosis, and arthritis. So that was rather sobering, I would have to say. And then if we wanted to look at individual chronic conditions, this gives us an idea of how our population compares against all seniors in New York City who are 65 years of age or older, or U.S. seniors who are 65 years of age or older. And as you can see, there's quite a difference between the health status of our population within these different chronic conditions versus New York City as a whole. And, you know, some are quite disturbing. If we, for instance, look at diabetes, we can see here where 37% of NYCHA residents self-reported having been diagnosed with diabetes. And I guess everybody in the room knows that if 37% are declaring that they know that they have diabetes, probably another 5, 10, 12% on top of that number actually have the condition as well. So it's a alarmingly large number of folks who are having to live with that condition. Depression, smoking, and others. Smoking turned out to be a surprise as well, because we're about twice what the incidence is in New York City as a whole. And a lot of people think that that the economics of buying cigarettes is going to impact that. But are you familiar with Lucy's? Lucy's are, that was the economy's answer to the increase in cigarette packs. Cigarettes are sold individually on the street, and those are called Lucy's. So a person who smokes doesn't necessarily have to put out $12.50, which I think is the current price for a pack of cigarettes in New York City. You can go and buy one or two or three cigarettes on the street, and that's what a Lucy is. By the way, just as a departure, I mentioned that New York City's housing authority is the largest in the country. Would anyone care to guess who number two is?
Chicago?
L.A.? Any guesses over here? Because the answer actually surprised me when I found out what it was. Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico's number two, so that's a tidbit you can take home. Hey. Hey. But again, this is a very serious situation that we're looking at as far as our population is concerned. If we look at the treatment of the self-reported chronic conditions, these are good numbers. I mean, this is essentially saying that most of the folks who have to live with these conditions, that these conditions are in fact being treated. And there's some additional information along these lines that's in a slide to follow. But we also found, for instance, that 57% reported that they are not participating in the Medicare Part D program, which I think is not that far off from what the New York City figures are. But again, if we're talking about a relatively poor population, then that was something that was somewhat alarming as well. And this is in spite of us having a very active campaign when Medicare Part D was initially introduced to tell people about it and to try to encourage their participation in that program. Okay, if we looked at insurance coverage and access to care, just about everybody has insurance. There's no issue there. And also we found out that during the course of the year there were questions that pertained to whether there were any periods of time when they didn't have insurance. So about 1 out of 10 said that they were uninsured during the past year, and we guess that that probably pertained to people signing up for Medicare, after the 3 months prior to the 65th birthday. So that might be one of the situations. And also we speculate, and again it's pure speculation, that these may have been folks who were part of the Medicare Advantage program and decided to switch plans and found themselves at a period of time uninsured because they didn't follow the proper guidelines. Also, surprisingly, about one out of five of the residents who were under 100% of the poverty level did not have Medicaid. And that was a bit of a surprise, and we don't know exactly why that's the case. We do know that there are some people who, of course, voluntarily do not participate in the Medicaid program because Medicaid, there are two tests. There's an income test. There's an asset test. So if you have, over the years, accumulated, let's say, a savings account, you might have $10,000 or $15,000 in that account. In order to qualify for Medicaid, you'd have to actually spend that down. So a lot of folks, if they have, you know, if they haven't really experienced, medical situations where Medicaid is necessary, they're going to hold on to that and perhaps not participate in the program voluntarily. We also found that there are some gaps in terms of access to care, but this was really something that was not particularly alarming, thank goodness. That says 11% reported not having a primary care provider, but that also says that 9 out of 10 do have a primary care provider, so not so bad, really. With what degree of activity and vigor do our residents access community services? And the community services that we looked at were senior centers, congregate meal programs, meal delivery programs, and so forth. And we found that the seniors who frequent senior centers are more likely to access those types of services and programs. And that, surprisingly, many of the NYCHA residents who experienced ADL limitations did not take full advantage of the types of programs that could possibly make their lives easier. So, again, this is information that's going to be very valuable to us because we can address programs to try to make those numbers much more favorable. So, in conclusion, the prevalence of the chronic and limiting conditions, we found out, you know, they're very high, but I guess you could say that senior residents who live in public housing are not any worse off than other poor New Yorkers. And I'm not saying that to suggest it's a positive type of statement, but I think it is relatively factual. Also, in terms of insurance coverage, it's high. But there's still a number of benefits, whether it's Medicare Part D, whether it is Medicaid, whether it is the Medicare Savings Program. There are a number of programs that are available that residents are not taking full advantage of. And we also, of course, learned, as the previous slide showed, that a number of our residents who could really benefit from some of the community services are not taking advantage of those services. So we actually published a report reflecting the findings, and this is what it looks like. I have a couple of copies if any of you would like it, or if you'd like me to mail you a copy, just give me your business card and I'll see that that's done. So we did publish the report. The actual distribution of the report actually just took place within the past 2 weeks, although it is available online as well. Next steps that we're looking at, it's one thing to do the survey, you find out all these things, but we obviously, the difficult part is doing something about it. So, we've kind of set up a structure. So some of the next steps identified in the report were to actually do a better job of or set up systems that would allow us to identify those residents who are at risk but are younger than 65. Clearly, the chronic conditions that were described earlier, they didn't hit people when they turned 65. So if we have a senior population that manifests these conditions, it probably means that the adult population within public housing is equally in the same or probably manifests similar conditions. We also want to train our staff, particularly our field staff, those who actually work within the developments themselves, to really, begin to notice things that are going to be occurring on a more frequent basis with the number of senior residents increasing. Whether it's people dressed inappropriately season-wise, or whether it could hoarding is a big problem within the senior population, even within NYCHA. So training them to be a little more sensitive and to be knowledgeable about these issues, and also documenting and disseminating information about available services in the community as well as available services within the housing authority itself. And then to try to work closely with residents so that we can maximize the insurance coverage that they all have, so that in case they do need services, they would actually be covered. So finally, and moving forward, we have set up a structure. We're setting up steering committees that are multi-agency steering committees to address this issue, as well as internally a steering committee. There's going to be active involvement and engagement with the resident leadership, and that's, I probably should have mentioned earlier, that they've been involved and engaged in this process from the very beginning and will continue to be involved and engaged in the process, and to partner with additional city agencies and, like we're all trying to do, find some funding. So with that, I'd like to acknowledge the team that put the report together, and thank you very much for your attention and your time.